All right, good afternoon, and congratulations on making it to the final speaker for the afternoon. Hopefully we can bring this home, all right. Thank you, Khosrow. My name is Emily Piercefield, and I appreciate the opportunity to come speak with you today about antihypertensive medication adherence and blood pressure control among Central Alabama veterans. So medication adherence generally refers to whether patients actually take their medication as mutually agreed when prescribed by their healthcare provider, and whether they continue to take that medication. So previous studies have shown that only 1/4 of prescriptions are ever filled, and even if they are filled, only about half of patients who are prescribed antihypertensives are actually still taking it 1 year after initiating therapy. Patients are particularly likely to stop taking medications for a chronic condition that has no symptoms, like hypertension, because they may experience side effects without really being able to appreciate any sort of perceived benefit of symptomatic relief. So medication adherence has been associated with better health outcomes, including better blood pressure control, fewer emergency department visits, fewer hospitalizations, lower mortality, and lower healthcare costs. An estimated 1/3 to 2/3 of all medication-related hospitalizations are the result of poor adherence to prescribed medication, and this leads to excess healthcare costs of about $100 billion per year in the United States. Adherence has been shown to reduce costs by over $4,000 per year for a patient treated for hypertension. And although the annual pharmaceutical costs increase slightly because the patients are actually taking their medication, there's still an overall reduction in medical expenses, and that leads to a cost-benefit ratio of 1 to 10 with medication adherence. So an estimated 30% of U.S. adults have high blood pressure, and this amounts to about 67 million Americans with hypertension. Among all patients with hypertension in a national health study, less than half actually had adequate control of their blood pressure. Some of those that had inadequate control were not under drug treatment. But even among patients treated with antihypertensive medications, only 60% had controlled blood pressure. Inadequate control of the blood pressure can in part be related to non-adherence to the prescribed medication. And even modest elevations in blood pressure can increase a patient's risk for heart disease, stroke, and other health complications. So we examined data on outpatients at a regional veterans healthcare system to describe their patterns of antihypertension medication prescribing, the patient adherence to medication, blood pressure control, and looking for a relationship, if there was one, between adherence and blood pressure control. The purpose was to establish a baseline before they initiated a pharmacy program with the aim to improve medication adherence and blood pressure management among their patients. So existing electronic health record data from the Central Alabama Veterans Healthcare System, or CAVS, were abstracted for all veterans eligible for CAVS care that had been prescribed at least one antihypertensive medication during fiscal year 2015, which ran from October 1st, 2014 to September 30th of 2015. Antihypertensive medication classes included were beta blockers, thiazide diuretics, calcium channel blockers, angiotensin receptor blockers, and angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitors. And we also included formulations that had fixed combinations of any of those two medications. We calculated the mean population adherence using that same proportion of days methodology that's so common in the literature. Adherence was defined for each veteran as having at least 80% of days covered by an antihypertensive medication from the date of the first antihypertensive medication fill until the end of the fiscal year or date of death. Now, blood pressure control was defined as a mean recorded measurements of less than 140 millimeters mercury systolic and less than 90 millimeters mercury diastolic when you look at the average of the last three blood pressures taken during that fiscal year. Additionally, data abstracted included age and mean height and body weight in order to calculate body mass index. So for fiscal year 2015, there were 33 different antihypertensive medications dispensed through 79,000 medication fills to almost 18,000 unique patients in the CABS system. The mean number of unique antihypertensive medication classes dispensed per patient was 1.8 through an average of 4.4 prescription fills during the year with a mean of 83 days supply for each fill during the year. Nearly half of patients, or about 45%, received only one class of antihypertensive. 35% received two different classes, 16% three classes, and 3.5% received four or more different classes of antihypertensives. So illustrated by the colored bars are the proportions of patients dispensed the medication of each class among those who received any antihypertensive. So half received an ACE inhibitor, about 40% a calcium channel blocker, almost 40% a beta blocker, 37.5% a thiazide diuretic, and 13% an ARB. This graph shows medication adherence in green and blood pressure control in red among patients treated with antihypertensive medication. Overall, 75% of patients met criteria for being considered adherent to their medication regimen, and 66% were considered to have adequate blood pressure control. So depicted here is the mean systolic and diastolic blood pressure in proportion of patients with controlled blood pressure by their adherence status. There were small but statistically significant differences in the mean blood pressure between the adherent and the non-adherent groups. The proportion of patients with adequate blood pressure control was higher among those considered adherent at 67.4% compared with 62% among those that were considered non-adherent. Thus, in bivariate analysis, patients considered adherent were 1.09 times more likely to have adequate blood pressure control compared to those who were considered non-adherent. So this shows the mean systolic and diastolic pressure and the proportion of patients considered adherent by status of blood pressure control. So comparing patients with controlled blood pressure to those not controlled, there were meaningful differences in blood pressure, such as a systolic mean of around 125 for patients with adequate blood pressure control compared to 151 among patients without adequate control. And you might notice here that although patients with controlled blood pressure had high adherence, with 78% considered adherent, patients who had uncontrolled blood pressure had nearly 74% considered adherent as well. So in a multivariable logistic regression model of blood pressure control, adjusting for age, body mass index, the number of antihypertension medication fills, and the number of antihypertensive drug classes, the odds of blood pressure control was 1.33 times higher for those who were adherent to their antihypertensive medication compared to those who were not adherent. So just to summarize our findings, overall, 3/4 of Central Alabama veterans met criteria to be considered adherent to their prescribed antihypertensive regimen, and 2/3 met targets for adequate blood pressure control. And after adjusting for several factors, we found that patients considered adherent were 33% more likely to have adequate control compared to those who were non-adherent. And although adherence was significantly associated with control, a substantial portions of patients that did not have adequate control were also considered adherent to medication. So this suggests that interventions to increase blood pressure control should not only focus on adherence, but look at additional factors as well. So based on these findings, CABS has instituted a pilot project for a multidisciplinary patient education effort for patients who have hypertension. Patients selected by their providers are invited to participate in a series of 4 group training sessions about hypertension, medications, dietary recommendations to control blood pressure, and stress management. So during these sessions, patients are also provided an opportunity for one-on-one medication counseling with a pharmacist. So initial indications from this pilot project have been that patients have experienced measurable benefits from the training sessions, and they're extending this project even further. So of course, there are some limitations. This analysis was done at a Veterans Affairs facility, and patients there have little to no copayment, so they have low financial barriers to medication adherence. They also have the opportunity to participate in a mail order pharmacy program, which might not be available to people in other health systems. And then speaking about the proportion of days covered methodology, it does assume that medications that are filled by the patient are actually consumed by the patient. And then another assumption is that if patients don't fill their medication, it's attributed to non-adherence, when in fact it could be that their provider discontinued the medication, or maybe switched them to a medication that's more of a secondary or tertiary treatment that is not actually included in the analysis. And then some patients might actually be prescribed one of these agents for reasons other than blood pressure control. Like you might be given a beta blocker or a calcium channel blocker to control your heart rate, not to necessarily to control blood pressure. And then patients may have moved out of the area or gotten care from other sources of healthcare that we didn't capture in this analysis. And lastly, one other potential limitation is that we didn't try to account for other comorbid conditions or severity of illness or socio-demographic factors, but if you look in the literature, a lot of those factors have not been shown to be useful predictors of adherence. So recommended actions to improve blood pressure control could be for clinics to institute processes to improve medication adherence and provide patient education. Clinicians can improve adherence by providing simplified regimens for patients, like minimum number of medications, using combination pills when they can, and choosing long-acting formulations, all of which are aimed at achieving the fewest required daily doses of pills for patients. Clinics can also use mail order or automated refill systems to facilitate medication refills and, when able, lower financial barriers by minimizing copayments or other out-of-pocket costs. To avoid clinical inertia, practices should have protocols in place to actively recognize patients with elevated blood pressure and intensify their treatment to maximize blood pressure control, get them back into the clinic to closely monitor their blood pressures, and they might even consider offering complementary blood pressures without an appointment or whatever it takes just to get those patients back in there and not just forget about them after they've noted their elevated blood pressure. Clinicians might also want to adopt a hypertension treatment algorithm based on current recommendations to help guide their blood pressure management. But of course, the burden of improving adherence and blood pressure control doesn't fall only to the primary care provider. Team-based care can involve other clinic personnel or allied health professionals. Studies have shown that nursing staff, for example, can improve blood pressure control through things like offering telephone support for home self-monitoring of blood pressure, or they can provide patient education, health coaching, and potentially even engage in physician-supervised medication adjustment. Pharmacists can have a larger role in providing patient education, doing individual counseling, and performing medication therapy management, which is a reimbursable service. The bottom line really is that treating patients with hypertension lowers their risk for serious complications and improves health outcomes. But this is only going to work if healthcare providers can maximize medication adherence, but also recognize and manage patients who have not achieved adequate blood pressure control. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge the contributions of the folks at Central Alabama Veterans Healthcare System, Alabama Department of Public Health, and CDC. And happy to entertain any questions. Thank you. I guess everybody wants to go home.
So, well, we'll have a few more minutes, and I think we could collectively ask other questions from our group here. But first of all, I promise you that you are in for a treat. And wasn't this a wonderful presentation? So let's give them another.
Thank you.
So if I were to write editorial for the four presentations that we saw today on a dedicated issue of a journal, this is how would I start that argument. I would say, well, other than you're in for a treat, I would say electronic medical health records are a wonderful source of information. In upcoming articles, you would read and start with, there are challenges that each of our presenters encountered, and those challenges were not necessarily a path that everybody else followed. They did not have a roadmap in order to get from point A to point B and to the final destination. Each uniquely followed their own procedures and method, although they used the same kind of a concept, right? But they came up with their own approaches. The second point would be findings. And although there was some attempt to create this concept that there is a sort of a external validation of what they found, such as BRFSS, but we already poke hole at that standard as a benchmark. There are some limitations even to that, let alone being the gold standard for comparison. So that's the second aspect of it. And the third aspect of it is we have a lot of challenges ahead of us. So relying on only electronic medical record would not be sufficient for public health use of for surveillances. So our surveillances needs to be complemented by electronic medical record, but not one at the expense of the other. So those are my comments, and of course my editorial. So you would be very interested in reading those articles, yes? And I'm sure our colleagues would be making their best effort to publish them, yes? So you have already tapped your audience.